Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org. And we're back to the Leading LDS podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum. I'll be your host. And one thing you may not know about me is that, a lot of you know that I actually am a caricature artist on the side. I go to various corporate events, weddings, things like that. And every year in May, you know, here in Utah, I don't know if this thing they do across the United States or in the world, but we have these all-night senior parties, right? So if you graduate from high school, you go to an all-night senior party. And so there's three or four high schools around the Salt Lake Valley, really along the Wasatch Front, that hire me to come and do draw caricatures at these all-night senior parties. So at the end of May, say an extra prayer for me, because in 1 week, I stay up all night for three or four nights, and I sleep a lot the next day, let's just say that. But I digress. In this episode, I love when we do international How I Lead interviews, and as you know, How I Lead is a segment on the Leading LDS podcast where we interview everyday leaders and just ask them, how is it that you lead? How do you go about your day-to-day responsibilities in your calling, whatever it is your leadership calling is? And so we're headed to Dublin, Ireland to talk with Mark Coffey, who is a member of a stake presidency there. And he's actually, before that, served as a bishop. And so we talk about the church in Ireland, how it's going, some different intricacies of being a member in Ireland, and then obviously just how he leads and some great solid leadership principles that I think you will benefit from. Oh, and I need to mention that during this interview, something happened with my side of my recording, okay? And my voice sounds very strange, as if I'm in a room filled with helium and my voice is much higher. I'm not sure what happened, but luckily Mark's side of the interview sounds normal, and that's who's talking most of the time. So just ignore how weird my voice sounds. And with that said, here's my interview with Mark Coffey in Dublin, Ireland. And today we're going to a faraway land in the land of Ireland, Dublin, Ireland, to talk with Mark Coffey. How are you, Mark?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Good.
Good. Well, I've got to say, I've mentioned you before we record, you have the most Mormon name in a weird way that you could have.
I know. You can imagine right? That as a missionary too, you know, trying to explain. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one, all right.
Right. There's probably not too many brother cigarettes either, or, you know, or brother beer or things like that. Unless it's a cool last name, and it's Coffey, right?
That's right, yeah.
Nice. And I'm sure you've done your family history to find the origins of such a name.
Yeah, well, it's an anglicized version of the Irish name. So the Irish name is O'Cuffig, which means the son of Cuffig. So when the English came and took over our country, they anglicized a lot of the names so they could pronounce them a bit better. So it ended up as Coffey and stuck ever since. So
nice.
That's where it came from.
And it works. It works.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get to know you a little bit, and I'll just go through some rapid fire questions, and not that your answers have to be rapid, but these questions will be rapid and you can expound as you wish. So first one is, where were you raised?
So I was raised here in Ireland, down the south of the country, primarily on the coast. And then when I was 12 or so, I guess we moved up to the capital here in Dublin. So I've lived here since then.
Nice. And when did you get baptized?
At 8. So my parents joined the church when I was young. So I was about 3 or 4, I think, they joined the church. So I was raised as LDS in a little branch on the coast. And my parents and one other family were pretty much the only members we had down there for my first 12 years of my life. So, yeah.
Wow. So were you like the only youth in the ward growing up, or was it really slim on numbers that way?
Well, my mom was my primary teacher all the way through primary. But by the time I hit young men, we moved up to Dublin. So we had some other youth that I got to hang out with. So that was good.
Oh, that's nice. Very nice. And what about, did you serve a mission?
Yeah, so I served in Canada, Winnipeg. So right in the center of Canada there, the nice flat plains of Winnipeg in Saskatchewan and Manitoba was where the area covered. So, yeah.
And you picked up a little bit of a Canadian accent while you're there?
No, I came home with an American accent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just from being, I mean, obviously, you know, the Canadian accent isn't that different than an American accent.
But, no, it's not. But I mean, all my companions pretty much were American, bar one. So, yeah, that's where it came from. So,
that's great.
I got quite a bit of stick when I got home about that, too.
I bet. I mean, there's a lot of Irish pride back there, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But there's missionaries that go to England and come back with an American accent. So, you know, at least I went close to the source.
Right. Yeah. At least you had a good excuse why you lost your accent. So,
absolutely.
Did you attend college?
Yeah. So I've attended multiple colleges. I never finished anything, but I did attend a couple here in Ireland. Different disciplines, I suppose, but kind of ended up where I am now in IT. I did some programming in college, and from there, I was hired into this company where I work now, and I've been working there in IT ever since. So.
Gotcha. So what is it you do? Are you a programmer day to day?
No, I'm the IT manager. So I was a programmer when I started, but then I moved into the IT role. So I oversee all of the IT infrastructure and all of that in the company now.
Oh, great. Great. Let's see. Where did you meet your spouse?
Well, so because we lived in Waterford and there was no one else in the branch, really, my wife said that they came to visit the branch back when I was about 10, I think. I'm not too sure if that's true because I don't remember it all, but she claims that she lied about her age so that she could get into my primary class.
Wow. Yeah. So this is a long courtship.
Yeah, pretty much. So then we dated when we were 16, and then I left on my mission, and then we dated again when I got back from my mission, and that was it. The rest is history.
Nice. Nice. And how many years ago was that you got married?
We celebrated our 22nd wedding anniversary last month.
Well, yeah. Congratulations. That's fantastic. and so you live now in Dublin, right? And what, I'm a bit out of touch here when it comes to Ireland, but how large of a city is that? I imagine it's quite a large city.
Well, not by US standards. We're probably about 1.5 million people live in the city.
Oh, okay.
The whole country, I think, is only 4 million, so it's quite small population, but it's a pretty small land space too. But yeah, it's about 1.5 million in the city in Dublin. So
nice. And how would you describe the church presence there?
It's let me see. I had a look at the quarterly report when we were preparing for this. we do have we've got 2,400 members, and that covers our area covers the middle of the country. So the south of the country is a mission district, and the north of the country is a stake on its own, and then we have the stake that takes the center part. So we probably are responsible for maybe 2.5 million people, I think, live in the boundaries, and of that then we have about 2,500.
Wow, so it's a good chunk of people there to at least have a thriving stake.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously that's not all active, but we have probably about 50% of that. Oh, no, wait, hold on. No, that's wrong. We're going to have to scrap that bit of the interview. No, it's we have there's 2,500 members, but of those, we have maybe about 600 every week that come to sacrament meeting.
Gotcha. And how many wards? Is that one ward then? That's stake. How many?
That's the whole stake, yeah. So we have, we've got 8 units in the stake. So we have 3 branches and we have 5 wards.
Wow, that's great. And how long does a temple trip take?
Well, we're about to go on a temple trip tomorrow with the youth. We're going to take some of our youth over to the temple. We'll leave it. We'll get a 6:20 flight in the morning, and we'll get to the temple probably at about 10 a.m. It's not too bad.
It's an all-day event, right? I mean, it takes up the majority of the day.
Oh, yeah. No. It's an all-day event, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's fine. I mean, it's doable. You know, the flights are cheap, so it's not a huge expense either.
Yeah. All right, so here's some of the random questions here that we really get to learn about people on the How I Lead segment. Who is the most famous Mormon you've ever met?
So I've met a couple of the apostles, which is quite astounding, you know, that we live so far away, but yet we met with Elder Holland last year, and he met with all of the stakes in our mission, and he gave us some instruction, and we got to spend some time with him. And then we've also, we had Elder Ballard has been here twice in the last couple of years. He came while he was on vacation. They were on a cruise, and they stopped off in the port of Dublin, and he took a a cab, I guess, all the way in and attended Sacra Meeting, one of our units here. And then he came back then a couple of months later with the Airy Presidency, spent some time here too. And then Elder Bednar formed our, well, he called our current stake president. So when they were changing stake president, Elder Bednar was here interviewing all of the brethren. So yeah, so we've met three of the apostles in the last maybe 5 years.
Wow, that's a you're getting spoiled over there. It sounds like.
Yeah, no kidding. It's great.
And we just pass them on the street here in Salt Lake. It just gets old. No, I'm just kidding, of course. what is the first general conference talk that comes to mind?
Ooh, good, better, and best. That was a great talk.
Nice. Elder Oaks, right?
Elder Oaks, yeah, that was a superb talk. I also love that one by Elder, nice. Well, anything by Elder Uchtdorf, but another one that jumps to mind is the one where he said to lift where you stand. That was a great talk too. So those are two that jump to mind.
Yeah, fantastic. Mm. Yeah, and he sort of touched on that talk in the recent April General Conference as well.
I thought that was great.
Well, he can do that, you know.
It's, yeah, true.
Let's see. What is your favorite General Conference tradition? Do you have any traditions among your family there as General Conference comes around?
We've started to, my son and I, he's 10, we'll wear the same tie. And we'll try and wear a tie that one of the general authorities wore in the previous session of conference. So we try and stick to that kind of tradition. It's kind of cool.
So you and who wears the same tie?
My 10-year-old boy.
Oh, you and your 10-year-old boy. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you, so you keep extra attention at the ties that they're wearing during general conference to pick the right one?
Yeah, that's it. Well, it helps him to kind of focus on what's going on there, you know, rather than trying to keep him out of his iPod, you know?
Yeah, well, that's nice. Well, I don't know if you're familiar with This Week in Mormons. There's our friends that produce a podcast that's about all things Mormon in the news and such. But during General Conference, they have a tie tracker where they keep track of, you know, what was the dominant color worn. And anyways, you'll have to check that out. One thing,
definitely.
Yeah, one thing they discovered is that Elder Hales has worn the same tie for like the last 10 general conferences.
Yeah,
like,
I guess it's
just his general conference tie.
That's his lucky tie.
Yeah. So I'd love to ask him someday. I guess yeah. I have a
I'd
variety
love to hear
of other
the
questions.
Story behind that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I probably would ask an apostle several other questions, but one of those questions would be what's with the tie every general conference? But anyways, it kind of, that's a unique tradition. That's a tradition I've not heard as of yet. So, how about this? If you were ever to speak in General Conference, what topic would you choose?
Well, you'd asked me this previously, so I've been thinking about it. I mean, I don't know what I could say that would be important to anybody, but one of the things I really would love to hear at conference would be somebody to speak about the testimonies, how important it is to have a testimony, to gain a testimony, especially for our youth. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest problems we're having right now is our youth are just not getting into gate. They're not figuring out their testimonies in time. They're just leaving it way too late. So I think I think that's the biggest thing that concerns me is our youth not getting testimonies early enough. So that's probably something
that's a great, great topic. And it makes me think of, 50 years ago, maybe this idea of gaining a conviction in something was more common than it is today, right? Where we're just sort of in their little subgroups or, I don't know. Maybe it is sort of a new cause that we can't just take for granted anymore, that it's something that we really have to focus on and explain and articulate better. But I like that a lot. So what makes you a unique Mormon other than your accent? Oh, your name, of course. Yes. Brother Coffee. Nice. Nice. It's been Elder Coffee and Bishop Coffee and President Coffee, right?
That's right. Yeah. I did some work on an app that was used before we used to have before we had the Gospel Library on the Windows mobile platform. There was an app called Yanciware. You familiar with that?
No. What did it do?
Well, it was a Gospel Library app. So I did some work with the guys behind the scenes on that, and we prepared a lot of content for that, and we created an application that could digitize a lot of the content from the LDS website. So we digitize a lot of the conference talks and prepare them and index them and stuff. So I did some work with the guys on that. That was fun. Hmm. And then the Gospel Library app came out, so we didn't have to work on it anymore. It's great.
Nice. And I guess, was that a good thing or you were kind of disappointed?
No, it was a great thing because we were constantly behind the curve and trying to get all the content out. It was taking a lot of work to manually convert all that. And we were trying to find a way to automate it. I guess one of the guys on the team worked with the LDS .org department and talked about the content and how we could make it easier to digitize that content. But whatever they did, the software library is miles ahead of what we were working at the time. So it's great.
Great. So what leadership callings have you had and what's your current calling?
I think I've served most every calling possible. I mean, I've been in Young Men, I've been in Sunday School, I've been on the High Council, Bishoprics, I was a clerk, I've been Elders Quorum, and at the moment I'm serving on the State Presidency.
Nice, and you sort of cut out a little bit there. You've been a bishop, right?
Yeah, so I was a bishop just before this calling. I was a bishop in our ward.
Oh, cool. So let's go back to, I'm always interested to hear the story of how you were called as bishop. What do you remember from that experience?
Well, the second counselor was, they were moving away and they were going to serve a mission. So we kind of knew in the stake that they were going to have to change someone on the stake presidency. So I was coming up towards the 6-year mark of serving as a bishop. So I kind of knew I was coming to the end of that also. But I kind of fought against it, as you always do, that no, I don't want, that's not a calling I want to have to do. But it's something where you kind of know in the back of your mind that this is something that the Lord's preparing you for. And so when the call came, it was a little funny experience. My son found out we got a call from the stake president. He said, can you and your wife come over and meet me on Friday evening? So we told my son, we said, listen, you're going to have to stay here. We got to go meet with the stake president. And so his first thing was like, oh, dad's getting fired.
Nice.
So, but that was it. Then we went over and we had a meeting. I mean, quite good friends with the stake president, so I know him quite well. We grew up in the youth program together. So it's a great experience to serve with him now.
Yeah. Wow. And then did that happen around a state conference, or was it in between conferences?
So there was, I guess, the member of the presidency left in like April of the year. And then we had a broadcast state conference coming up in the May. So he had permission then at the start of that broadcast to do the call. So it was in May of that year. And it was unique because it was a broadcast. So he had a couple of minutes to do some state business. He had me called, but I didn't get to go sit on the stand because the brethren were broadcasting from, I think it was Salt Lake at the time. So I got to sit with my family for a change.
Nice. Very nice. And so how would you describe that transition from being bishop to being in the stake presidency? What stood out?
Well, for about a week there, I was the bishop and on the stake presidency too. Mm-hmm, the transition, I suppose, it's different because you're not dealing with people as much as you are as a bishop. I mean, all that. And I really felt the mantle move to the new bishop at that point. And so it was great to know that there was no downtime, between callings, sure, because I had, we had the two callings for one point. But it's mostly a lot of the admin stuff. But having been a bishop and knowing what it is I needed my counselors to do, was great to be able to take that and say, well, this is what I would have loved the counselor to do, so this is what I'm going to do. And so to try and take a lot of that work off his hands that he doesn't have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. And now how long has it been since you've had that call?
This will be 4 years next month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're definitely settled and you've figured out the ropes for the most part.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, he hasn't fired you yet, so.
Not yet.
Right. But I'm sure your son is paying attention when he does. But
probably.
So you described a little bit about the kind of the demographics of your stake. Is there anything just in general that maybe somebody in the in the United States, in the more traditional Utah church area, would find surprising about how the church runs, or some characteristics about the church in Ireland?
Well, we had our own mission, so it was a Dublin, Ireland mission for quite some time. And then they merged that with the Scotland mission. So now it's the Scotland-Ireland mission. So it covers both of the countries and multiple different stakes across that. So we don't have a lot of interaction with the mission president, whereas we used to have that. And I'm not sure if that's typical for Utah either. You probably would never meet the mission president. We meet with the mission presidency, a member of the mission presidency, every month, and we would talk about issues around the mission. So missionary work is quite important. It's top of our mind all of the time. But those people that we find recently that have been baptized in the church are mostly non-nationals. So we have a lot of people that would come from other countries. We've got lots of people from Brazil who come here to learn English. We've got lots of people from China who come to learn English also. We have people who are refugees fleeing from other countries, mostly Africa. And then we also have people from Eastern Europe who are coming over as well. So we do have quite a mix. It's a very multicultural church here, which I guess when about 20, maybe 30 years ago, it was predominantly white Irish people that were members of the church. But now we're the minority almost, which is great. It brings a great richness to the
And so you get a mix of cultures, you know, that show up on Sundays.
Absolutely. And then also I should mention Filipinos. We have a lot of people from the Philippines. We had a while there where we had a shortage of nurses. So they hired in a load of nurses from the Philippines into the country. And lots of those were members of the church. So we have quite a number of Filipino members of our church, which is great. And they bring that great food. The food from everywhere is great at activities.
Nice. It adds a little bit to the potlucks there. Huh?
Totally.
So what about, is it to the point where you even have like language units pop up other than English?
No, we do have some issues right now where we're trying to figure out, you know, like where we have conferences, we would take the broadcast in English and then we'd also relay it in Portuguese. And then I think we're trying to figure out if we can get some ways to translate into Portuguese in some of our units where we'd have a larger number of Brazilians in that. So that's where we are now. We're just trying to figure that part of it out.
Hmm. That's great. So what about just your week-to-week calling in the state presidency? Well, and maybe let's back up a little bit. Just thinking back your time as a bishop, anything as far as any unique approaches to your weekly meeting schedule or, you know, during the meetings during the week or anything like that?
No, we would meet weekly as a bishop, we would meet weekly with the ward council. And then with that new direction, we got to focus more on the ward council than the PEC. We tried to include that with the ward council, we'd meet with them twice a month instead of once a month. And so we found that approach worked quite well. But I would assume that's typical, that you would just meet once a week in an evening in the building and have it that way. Yeah. We don't do any remote calls or any conference calls.
And was the geographics of your ward manageable enough where you could meet as a bishopric during the week or easily do weekly meetings or interviews as a bishop?
Both my counselors, which is very unique, lived within a 5-minute walk of my house, which is unusual even in Ireland. But so the demographics of the ward, we do have a rather large unit. We would probably drive about an hour and a half to get out of the unit on one direction. So it can go quite far away, but those locations that far away, there's not really many members that would come up. So we have a lot of potential for growth, but just because of the transport that up and down, we just don't have missionaries in any of those areas, but there's plenty of area for growth.
Yeah. And what about in the state presidency? How often do you meet as a state presidency?
Weekly. We meet weekly. And then sometimes we'll do like a call on a Sunday evening, maybe have a conference call between three of us because it's just so much stuff. We could spend an hour and a half every single week and still not get to the bottom of everything. I mean, it's quite full on with the amount of information that just goes back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so do you meet, is that on the Sunday when you meet in person?
No, we'd meet every Tuesday. So we have, or I should say Tuesday, that's how we say it here. So my wife tells me every time Tuesday. I talk to Americans, I say Tuesday. I should say Tuesday. We meet here on Tuesdays in the evening time. And I travel maybe about 30 minutes from my house. And the other two guys live probably about 15 minutes away from the stake center.
Great. And then how do you handle temple recommend interviews? Do you have a set time every weekly that you make yourself available to do those?
I set aside one Thursday of the month that I will deal with all the temple recommend interviews that come. And then the other member of the presidency, he will do one Tuesday a month. So what we try and do is, now that's obviously just normal months that works, but when we have a run up to a temple visit, I'll be doing them at 10 o'clock in the morning before we have sacrament meeting with some of the units, or we'll have people travel to the stake center on Tuesday and we'll have that before our meetings. So we do end up having to kind of be a bit more flexible, especially if there's an older person who needs a temple recommend. You try not to make them travel, so we'll probably try and visit their unit if we can and do the interview there rather than making them travel to the stake center. That's probably nice. Typical though, I'd say.
Nice. And what about home and visiting teaching? How does that work? Is it really spread out that you have to be creative in how those leaders approach that?
Yeah, some of the units are. So the branches are further out, and they would have a fairly big area. So I remember when my father was branch president, he used to spend the whole evening traveling, and he'd do hundreds of miles in one evening to try and get his home teaching done. So it can be quite difficult for those brethren. So we have kind of tried to get them to use a bit more leeway with, you know, making sure that they find another way to contact. And especially with Elder Holland's talk last conference, not the one just gone, but the one last October, where he had said that
everybody emissaries to the church, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's, so we've tried to kind of ask the Elder Scorn presence to take that and to use the inspiration for their calling to try and make that happen as much as they can. So, but yeah, you have to be great. More flexible.
That's great. Well, as I generally do in these How I Lead segments, is I asked you to prepare five leadership principles that you've sort of worked into your leadership style or picked up from others along the way. And so let's go through those. And I think there'll be a lot that we can learn. The first one that you mentioned is have a clear view of God's vision for you and your calling. Expound on that.
Okay. So there was a guy called John Cotter, and he wrote this document. It's on Harvard. I'll send you the link, right? And I read through this document. One of my, it was my clerk at the time, and he had read this, and he thought this, it's titled Leading Change. And it talked about how to make a change in an organization. And so there's a couple of, I think he has 13 steps that are important to making that change. But one of the clear things was to have a vision for that change. And so at the time, we had been trying to figure out how to work on this mission plan that we were supposed to have. And we just couldn't figure out. And I was getting this stupor of thought and really couldn't get my head around what it should be. And then somebody mentioned in the meeting, I can't remember who it was, and they said something about home teaching and how President Monson is, you know, that we'd love to have President Monson as our home teacher. And I remember somebody spoke about it at a conference right after he said that. But I had thought, well, that's what we need. We really need everyone to kind of channel their inner President Monson and be that President Monson home teacher. And so that was the vision I had for the home teaching in the ward. And I figured that this was the key to all the problems we were having in the ward. The key was not having home teaching done the way that it should be done. So we kind of worked with that. And so in reading this document and kind of coming up with the success that we had in certain areas, I really feel that the Lord has a vision for what he wants you to achieve in your calling. And it might be different than what somebody else has to achieve. And so trying to follow another bishop and do the things that he has done may not be what needs to be done. You may need to figure out what the Lord wants you to do in this calling. And so I think that's important. Figure out what it is the Lord wants you to do and have a clear vision of that. And it's not going to be easy to get to. And it wasn't easy for me to figure out. But, you know, really aligning with the brethren, those conference talks, and making sure that when the brethren are speaking, that you're aligning yourself with what they are asking you to do. Our area presidency have a very clear vision, and it's so simple. They want to increase the membership of the area, and they want to double the membership in 10 years. And that's their vision. And everything they do is focused around that vision. They've given us these three area goals that they want us to focus on. Yeah, but it's Elder Kieran. Are you aware of Elder Kieran? On the area presidency, he gave a talk at General Conference about the scorpion. It was a brilliant talk. He's so inspired, and anything, I mean, he's such a nice guy. He'll come and he's very approachable, very down to earth, really, really nice guy. But he has a very clear vision of what he wants to achieve in the area. But the three things they've asked us to do is to bring a friend to church, to become spiritually and temporarily self-reliant, and also to find an ancestor. And they're the three things they've asked us to focus on. It's very simple that everybody can do those three things and to get involved in that. And so I think their vision is perfect. Elder Ballard spoke about it at length at our last conference we had. But that vision is very important to you for your calling, to have that vision of what it is you want to achieve.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this concept of vision is something I've been studying a lot about. And it's in the, you know, I've been putting together this Motivating the Minister Summit, and there's a whole session about vision and the importance of that. And that really is where, you know, it just creates so much focus for a leader to point to as they're, you know, teaching or trying to create a culture of service or whatever it is. It all goes back to that vision. And so, you know, I love the example of being the, I forget how you said it exactly, but being the home teacher like President Monson, right? Like that's something that, you know, sort of catchy and it kind of brings a smile to my face when I think about it. And so people can easily reflect back to that and, you know, remember what we're trying to do here is just to be the type of home teacher President Monson would be, you know, and that.
Right. And it's a very simple concept, but you really understand what that means. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And so, you know, vision and really developing a vision to the point that, and sometimes we create a vision and we just sort of like put it on the bookshelf, you know, and we don't refer back to it. We just sort of say, well, I did create the vision, but it should be have a presence in every meeting that you conduct and before that this is our vision and this is why we're holding this meeting. This is why we're talking about the subject, you know, and or even with the manuals, what is this lesson? How does this lesson fit into our vision, you know, and always bring it back to the vision and that keeps, that creates motivation and progress.
Yeah, absolutely. And that document I'll send you is very key on that. It talks about how these visions fail when you don't, you know, follow through on them and how to make sure that you follow through on these things to make sure that you, you know, keep talking about the vision. It's very important.
Yeah, love it. The next leadership principle we put is learn the difference between the traditions and the doctrine and principles of your calling. Oh, you're singing to my heart here, Mark. Tell me more.
Any calling I've had, I try and just get into the handbook and look in the handbook and see what is it that I need to do here. Sometimes there'll be meetings for the sake of a meeting and you can't figure out what the point of it is. So lots of times I'll lead a meeting and I'll start off the meeting by saying, this is why we're meeting. And I'll read the section of the handbook that says, this is what we're here for. And try and really get to the core of it because it's very limited time we have. We've only got once a week where we meet to talk about these things. You really want to get straight into what the core of what we're trying to do. And again, sometimes, like I did initially, I had said to cut out the traditions and stick to the doctrine. But sometimes I find that there might be a tradition of something that you do in a ward or in your stake, and it works. So don't cut out the things that work, but look at the stuff and cut out the extra stuff that doesn't work. Because, you know, really, we have limited time to achieve the things we want to achieve. You want to just get rid of all the other stuff that's not necessary. And kind of stick to the core things that are there. I can't think of an example right now, but I mean, there's several examples where, you know, you go into a unit and, you know, why are we doing this? Well, we've always done it this way. Okay, but that's not how we're supposed to do it. If you look at actually the ward council, ward councils had traditionally in our stake, I don't know, probably around the world, they'd been a round table report of how are things doing in the young women? How are things in the relief society? How are things in primary? And you just go around the table like that. And by the time you get to the last guy, he's got like 2 minutes to give a report, really wasting everybody's time because they don't get to discuss anything. And then Elder Ballard's telling us, no, this is how you need to do it and change in that direction and stuff. So really finding out the core of what it is you're trying to do, getting rid of all the stuff that doesn't work, but try not to get rid of stuff that does work, you know, whether it's in a handbook or not. Sometimes there are things that you need to keep.
Yeah, and I have a great example that this brought to my mind is when I was called, you know, just like you, I went from being a bishop to a member of the stake presidency. And when it came time to discuss ward conferences, you know, in the past as a bishop, it just seemed like the ward conferences, the way we did it, they were very, very complicated and very heavy. And it took a lot of effort and focus of the bishopric. And, you know, and it just sort of felt like there was this huge event happening. And so I decided, you know, I told the stake president, I'm going to put together an outline that we can follow that we can hand out to the wards in our stake. So I went to the handbook and I just told myself, I'm going to act like I've never even heard of a ward conference. I've never been to a ward conference. I'm just going to see what the handbook says and then develop the outline. And I was shocked how simple I could approach ward conferences. And now we approach them in a way that it's almost a week off for the bishopric, right? That we just sort of come in, as a stake, we handle and plan and direct it and tell them, you know, who's conducting and doing what. And it has really added to that too. And it all comes from, you know, stepping back and saying, I'm just going to act like I've never seen this part of the church and just go by the handbook and see what it says and then go from there, right? And it is refreshing perfect. And energizing to go through that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's exactly. It's perfect. That's it. Just to kind of assume that you've known nothing about this and then go and look and see what it is you're supposed to do rather than stick with the traditions. Yeah, very good.
Perfect. All right. The third principle you said is enable those around you to see and achieve their potential.
So we heard a couple of talks about this at conference just gone. There was the one where Elder Eyring spoke about the guy who crashed through the bank You remember that one?
Oh, yeah. That was President Eyring, right? And said, don't shoot, I'm a Mormon, right?
That's the one, right? And then he sat down and he said he was going to lay into this guy and let it rip. And then he said he had a vision of how this brother looked to the Lord, and that changed his whole direction. And I think it's very easy to micromanage something. And I used to do this where I'd be very concerned about delegating something because I'm ultimately responsible for the item that I'm about to delegate. And if it doesn't get done, it's going to come back to me and I'm going to have to do it myself. But we can't lead like that. We need to lead in a way that we're allowing people to have the inspiration for the calling, that we don't give them too much direction. We kind of give them a little bit of direction and allow them the inspiration then that comes with that to run with what it is we're delegating them with. So we need to see the potential in them and train them. You really want to be training a replacement, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a real approach to leading is really, not just going off your knee-jerk response, but stepping back and analyzing and saying, how would God perceive this situation and perceive this person? And really that's when their potential is made manifest or you see the vision of their potential. And that's what a leader should do.
Well, that again, sure. You're talking about vision again, encouraging these, those people we lead to have the vision for their calling, to know what it is that we want them to do, but also allowing them enough leeway to be able to get inspiration for that themselves.
Yeah, that's great. Number four is embrace change. This is God's work and he will change you to make you fit for purpose.
Yeah. So like in the world, when you lead, it's a lot of kind of, this is my way and this is the way we're going to do it because I said so. Whereas, the way we do things in the church is we need to do things the Lord's way. So we had an area authority visit us at our last state conference, and he said he realized, it was Elder Ruiz de Mendoza, he's an area authority from Spain. He said the change in their district happened because he said, I realized the Lord had a plan and I just had to get out of the way and let the Lord do the work and not be a hindrance to that. And so that's it. I mean, the Lord has a plan for this. And we need to not be a hindrance there. We need to allow him to change us. And so part of that, I think, is not getting hung up on, this is my calling and I'm telling you to do it this way because I want it done this way. But it needs to be more around allowing people to tell you, well, how was our meeting today? Well, Bishop, I think you kind of let the meeting get away from you. You didn't really engage this person or that person. The agenda kind of got lost. We need to look for criticism, I think, because we need to be better leaders. And we're not going to do that if people feel they can't give us criticism, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And this sort of ties into your fifth one too, right? The leadership in the church is not about directing others, but your willingness to be directed by God. That's a quote by President Uchtdorf.
Yeah, I thought that was perfect because I was thinking about this. And what I was thinking about was the difference between leaders and between leading and serving. And there is a difference between the two of them, but President Uchtdorf put it great. I love the quote when he said the guy had told him not to inhale the praise that comes for his calling. And it's important that we need to be sure that, it's the office that people respect. It's not the man sitting there on the chair. And we need to not let that get to our heads. But I think, again, with that, allowing the Lord to direct the work and to be in tune, finding a way to make sure that you're doing what the Lord wants you to do is difficult the best of times, but it's more important as a leader. Our stake president keeps telling us one of the things, and when I was a bishop, he'd always tell us this. He'd say, the Lord wants to bless the lives of the members that you're serving, and you may be the only person that he can get to do that. And if you're not in tune with the Spirit, then they're going to lose out on those blessings. And the key for us was to be pure, to have our personal righteousness to a point where we were receiving revelation, because if we're not, we're going to be held accountable for that. When there's people there that need a revelation from their bishop and their bishop's not righteous and not receiving the revelation, he needs to be held accountable for that. So again, we need to be in tune with the Lord to know what he wants us to do for our calling.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Mark, this has been fantastic. And these are great, great principles and caused me to think or reassess some things. I love that quote by President Uchtdorf. I need to throw that out on Instagram or something. It's quotable, But and it's encouraging to hear about the church in Ireland and that it's growing and flourishing and hopefully there'll be some temple announcements there sooner than later. And I'm sure the saints pray for that every day.
Yes, they do.
So as you've had, you know, such remarkable opportunities to serve in leadership capacities, how has serving as a leader made you a better disciple or follower of Jesus Christ?
I'm humbled by the opportunities that we get. We've been very blessed in that we have lots of the brethren come to visit. Lots of, you get to see a lot of the, you know, the attributes that you want to develop as a leader and as a disciple. But those callings that come is a great opportunity to serve and to bring yourself in line with what it is the Lord wants you to do, and to develop that humility and develop your inner, you know, ear to be able to hear the Lord when he speaks. So I guess I've been forced into situations in my callings, and I don't think it's because I'm good at it. I think it's because the Lord needs me to learn something, and he puts me into a position where I'm out of my comfort zone and I really have no other choice but to rely on the Lord. And I guess that's made me a better disciple, because I'm forced to listen to what it is he wants me to do.
What a good man you are, President Coffey. Appreciate you taking the time to share with us how you lead, and I'm sure you'll be involved very much with the growth of the church in Ireland for decades to come. I appreciate you bearing with me as my voice was a bit crazy. I promise I sounded fine when we recorded, but nonetheless, that's how technology goes. If you know somebody who I should interview for the How I Lead segment, maybe a mentor or inspiring leader in your life, shoot me a message at leadinglds.org/contact and let me know who they are, and maybe send an email, and together we'll ask them in a nice way, letting them know that the world would benefit from their perspective on being a leader and sharing how is it they lead. As always, all we ask is $1 a month for the content. Well, maybe $2 a month, $3 a month, if you can afford it, for the content that we deliver at leadinglds.org. That keeps the content coming and keeps the machine moving forward as we're striving to enhance leadership ability and capacity for the lay leaders across the world, specifically in the LDS Church. And we can't do it without you. So if you haven't had opportunity yet, please go to leadinglds.org, click the donate button, and donate. And this How I Lead segment is brought to you by the Motivating the Minister Summit, the surprising truth of what motivates home and visiting teachers. If you missed the summit or haven't had an opportunity yet to check it out, head on over to leadinglds.org/motivationsummit. And there you'll be able to purchase the recording of the Motivating the Minister Summit and learn from 8+ hours of content from leadership experts about how to motivate those we lead. So check it out. And as always, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the own and only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.